Well, good afternoon to you.
You're like way over on the other side of the room.
Yeah, we changed chairs
today. We switched
chairs.
Yeah. Today will be weird.
I sound more important, don't I?
You do.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, yeah, this is the captain's chair right
here.
You're
like the boss of us now.
Make it so.
It's awesome.
Make it so, number one.
Because I made the fatal mistake of washing my face.
Yep.
Wednesday night, and when you wash your face, if you lean your back the wrong way, you will pinch the nerve that makes you swear a lot.
That's right, there is.
It's a specific
nerve. That's the story we're going with.
Low in your back.
Yeah. The true story is there's a difference between discipline and abuse.
You've been dying to say that.
I have.
And I can't even get over there.
Nope, you can't reach me.
I can't stand up. I can't
totally outmaneuver her now.
Dang it.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. So. Ow.
Yeah, you might hear some Tourette's on this show.
A little Tourette's going on.
Because every once in a while you get,
ow.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be talking to Peter Friedman today about Sharia law.
Sharia law.
Except I'm an invalid and a dummy. And yeah, I did. I put the Quran in here too. Anyway, it says Quran on the website. I lied.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Sharia law.
Because you know what? I got into a thing with a guy. I'm sure nobody's ever done this. You know, you have somebody on Facebook or whatever who writes that you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. And because you're not an expert, you know, you have to sort of just...
Yeah, you don't carry around your notebook with all your Sharia talking points.
Well, I never agree to disagree because that just sounds moronic to me, but...
Well, I always just go to name calling.
I'm a big fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Name-calling and belittling.
There you go. Yeah. Minimizing.
Yep.
Peter's on there? Yay. So we won't have to do that today. The good news is we won't have to do that. We'll be able to speak about actual facts. But it is something that comes up a lot because you'll hear, as I did, from...
converts, mostly.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'd be curious about that.
Yeah, comfort.
That, Sharia law, it's not a bad thing. People just say it's a bad thing, blah, blah, blah.
Don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, and then you kind of don't exactly. Yeah. You just know it's bad, and that's not really a very good argument.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you more than that today. So you don't have to just say, well, I know it's bad, but I don't know why, since that's an automatic lose. So, Mr. Friedman, are you ready to... regale us with scary tales?
Absolutely.
And hey, thanks for the picture of the sword, by the way. I have to put that on last week's program. For those people who, I don't know, maybe you haven't followed us online before, but you should. It's wethepeopleradio.us, and on there you will find all sorts of good stuff. Links to prior shows with Peter Friedman. So some of these things are going to build on one another, so we don't have to, you know, make people feel like it's a Groundhog Day every Sunday afternoon. Start from the beginning
again.
Well, we really, really good piano players. And
we talked a little bit about Sharia the last couple of shows, but you know, now we can kind of center on that and really get into
not the good
what
part,
it's all
though,
about.
Like why it's bad or you know what it's going to do and how it's incompatible with pretty much everything we believe in. So this will give you a pretty good good argument. I guess we should introduce ourselves. My name is Aaron Ryan.
Oh yeah, and I'm still Bill Cundiff.
and I'm still Bob Martin.
And he's still struggling with the website, so if you can't get into the chat room...
Our chat room's having some issues today.
I'm not struggling with it, but our webmaster had better be.
Bob's putting up a good fight on our side, calling him.
Getting back to that discipline and abuse thing again.
Exactly. Yeah, I can tell you exactly where to pinch his back that'll incapacitate him, actually.
Well, actually, I can tell you where to do that, because you know I'm really good at it.
You're bad.
I'm like a Vulcan death grip.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. So, all right, back to you, Peter.
So if you're hearing this, you're listening over AM 1460.
Yes. Yes, because the other choices are not there.
Because with no website, we have no online streaming.
No, but we will have the archive later, by hook or by crook.
We'll have
it in there for you. All right. So what's the scoop with Sharia law? Where do we start this puzzle?
Okay, one of the first things that I strongly recommend that anybody do is go to my website, islamthreat.com, and under the menu bar across the top that says books, go down about four or five different books down there until you get to Sharia law for non-Muslims. And that is a wonderful short pamphlet that was done by my buddy Bill Warner. I guess, let me take a look here. I got it in front of me back in 2010. And he is the man who runs the Center for the Study of Political Islam. And he wrote this, and you can click on it. Thankfully, it will come up in PDF, and then you can either read it online or you can download it to your own computer, and you can even print it out if you want to. It is 47, I have it in front of me, it's 47 pages, and it will tell you probably everything that you need to know about Sharia law that we're going to discuss in the next 2 hours.
So if it's for non-Muslims, how is it different than if it was Sharia for Muslims? They write it differently, or are they a little more advanced?
No. It's to explain Sharia to non-Muslims.
Okay.
So in other words, this is basically what we're going to discuss in the next 2 hours,
okay,
but at a greater length.
Nice. I will put that link on the page too.
Oh yeah, this is a blockbuster. Everything in here is all indexed. It's footnoted. It comes directly from Sharia. Now, what's interesting is when you use the expression Sharia law, that's actually redundant because Sharia is, in Arabic, it means the way or the law. So you would call it, legitimately al-Sharia, al-Sharia. I remember we were talking about Allah and al-Elah. So the law would be al-Sharia. Okay, so what is Sharia? Sharia is the compilation of the revelations in the Quran together with what is called the Sunnah, S-U-N-N-A. The Sunnah is comprised of the sayings of Muhammad called the Hadith, plus the actual behavior and traditions of Muhammad during his lifetime. So Sharia law is devised from the Quran and the religious obligations and prohibitions in the Quran, together with everything else having to do with Muhammad, including the Hadith and principally drawing on the sayings of Muhammad as reported by Bukhari. About 75% of those are from Bukhari. There's about 6,000 of these verses and sayings. And then Sahih Muslim, which was actually the name of another guy who lived about the same time as Bukhari, who came up with a few other ones. So this is where the law comes from. Now, what's interesting is Sharia was only actually codified and published around 1368 by a guy named Ahmad ibn Naqib al-Misri. And they finally decided to take all of this information well after Muhammad died back in 632, close to, 700 years later, and take all of the precedents that had come out of four different schools of legal thought at the time and combine them together. There were four schools of Islamic law, the Hanafi, Maliki, the Shafi'i, and the Hanbali. And these four clerics in Islamic law comprised about 75% of the legal conclusions and the legal precedents that appear in the Sharia. So what is the Sharia? Back around 13-something, this man, Naqib al-Misri, authored a basic text combining these four schools of legal thought into what is called in Arabic the Umdat al-Salik wa Udat al-Nasik. There will be no quiz on this later, by the way.
It's totally
okay.
Just
I'm writing as fast as I can.
There you go. Which loosely translates into English from that Arabic, the reliance of the traveler, meaning the traveler through life and through Islam, and tools of the worshiper. That's what that translates to. So if you want to review current Sharia, you can go on Amazon, or you can go on Google, you can go on abebooks.com, and you can pick up a copy of Reliance of the Traveler. Okay?
Okay.
Now, the last translation was done in 1994 by a man whose name was New Hamim Keller. Now, I used to have this. It was out there in PDF. You probably can find it in PDF if you Google it. I used to have it in PDF on my website. And then this guy, after several years of it being on my website, sent me a very nasty email and said that I'm going to sue you for copyright infringement if you don't remove it. And I told him, look, it's out there in the public domain. And he says, well, he says, you're costing me money because if you're giving it away for free on your website, then people aren't going to buy the book. And 2 weeks later, I got an email, believe it or not, from GoDaddy, who is the host of my website, IslamThreat.com. GoDaddy said, you have 48 hours to remove that or we are closing down your website.
No fooling.
Wow.
So that is why it's no longer on the website. Well, when I read some of the stuff here directly from Reliance of the Traveler, you may understand why they don't, as the Islamic community, really want to have that out in the public domain because of what it says. So, is this an authentic volume? In the very front, in the introduction to the volume, and I have it in front of me, and what's very interesting is that if you watched Judge Jeanine Pirro on Fox News last year, she actually had some Muslim imams on her show on that Saturday, and by God, she was sitting there with a copy of this big green book, Reliance of the Traveler, going through the book with them, and they sat there and they pretty much were denying, you know, what she was asking them, which is kind of funny. So anyway, we go to the front of the book in the introduction under documents, and it says basically this book is endorsed and translation is endorsed by a gentleman named Wakil Darubi, Imam of the Mosque of the Darwish Pasha in Damascus, Syria. And this is his warrant that he that the translator of this understands the text of this volume, is qualified to expound it and translate it into his native English. And it's also in Arabic. All of this is, you know, in Arabic and English. And then there is the documentation warrant of Ali Salman, who is the Mufti of the Jordanian Armed Forces, who swears in the book, I found the above-mentioned brother knowledgeable, means the translator, in what it contains and qualified to expound it and translate it into his native English. And I observed his accuracy and integrity in quoting the text he has added before and after the main work. Now, what really caught my eye was when I first got this, and one of the other documents that's in here stamping the authority of this volume is the report of the International Institute of Islamic Thought. And this is dated December 18th, 1990. And it's the report on the English translation of the Umdat al-Salik by Ahmad ibn Naqib al-Masri, undertaken by the scholar Nuhamim Keller, and in which he says, as for the correctness of the translation, its accuracy, and its fidelity to the meanings and objects, we had our colleague in the research department of the International Institute of Islamic Thought, you ready for it? The scholar Yusuf Talal De Lorenzo, remember him from the other day with Sharia Finance?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, old Sheikh De Lorenzo, member of the Fiqh Council of North America, that means the Law Council of North America, and former chief of the Translation Bureau at the International Islamic University in Islamabad, review its text and check it against the Arabic original. He found that the translation presents the legal questions in a faithful and precise idiom that clearly delivers the complete meaning in a sound English style. And it is signed off by Dr. Taha Jabir al-Awani, who is the president of the International Institute of Islamic Thought in Saudi Arabia and president of the Fiqh Council of North America.
Peter,
okay, the last one. There's a bunch of them here,
okay,
but I just want to read.
Before we go there, can you hold that thought, Peter? We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll jump right back into it.
Absolutely.
Fabulous. We'll be right back. Bill's sitting in the big chair. We're trying out different roles today. It did good.
It did all right.
Yeah. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Better hope in this particular instance the law doesn't win. Scary.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Peter. You were giving us some backup information there, and we had to.
Yeah. Okay. And the best one I like out of the certification by De Lorenzo is this last one in here, which is the certification of Al-Azhar University. Now, this is in Cairo, Egypt. If you recall, on June 4, 2009, Obama made his first major address at Al-Azhar University in Cairo. In 1928 at Al-Azhar, this is where the Muslim Brotherhood was founded by Hassan al-Banna. This is all very, you know, profound if you look at it. And the certification by the research department for writing and translation at Al-Azhar specifically states, we certify that the above-mentioned translation corresponds to the Arabic original and conforms to the practice and faith of the Orthodox Sunni community. There is no objection to printing it and circulating it, and it's dated February 11, 1991, and it's signed by the General Director of Research, Writing, and Translation, and this guy's name I cannot pronounce, so... Anyway, and the Arabic page is there. I mean, if you go and you buy this, it's about $30 to buy this book, and you start going through this, as Glenn Beck says, literally blood will flow out of your eyes. It is current as of today. It talks about prohibitions on watching television, seeing movies, playing music. It is the Muslims' guide to traveling through life from the moment they get up in the morning until at night when they go to sleep, with all the funeral practices and the burial practices and everything else in here, which are totally bizarre. This stuff is totally medieval once you get into it. Couple of things. The first chapter here, because I'm going to bounce around a little bit, the first chapter has to do with purification. And when you get into purification and the things that you are allowed to do with your body, it's very clear. And, for example, this is chapter E, as in Edward, 2.3. It is offensive to use the vessels of non-Muslims. So, you know, essentially that means, you know, that the Muslim goes into a non-Muslim restaurant and orders a glass of water, and in theory, it is not, it's offensive to use that glass because it is not a glass belonging to the Muslim.
That's going to make it kind of tough for them to navigate in a non-Muslim society.
Well, yeah, you know, works for us. If you go to Chipotle, you got to be careful too. Anyway, going down the way here, 3.1, using a toothstick is recommended any time except after noon for someone who is fasting, in which case it's offensive. So in other words, if it's Ramadan and it's in the afternoon and you were fasting all day long, you're not allowed to, you know, pick your teeth or use floss or anything. And then it goes,
they're not leaving anything out, are they?
Pardon?
It's a comprehensive guide.
Very comprehensive.
Oh, I'm telling, wait till you get to cleansing yourself, you know, and you have to wipe with a minimum of 3 stones, and you can only use your left hand because you hold the Quran in your right hand. It's. So, again, using toothpaste is also offensive if any reaches the stomach of someone fasting. So, you know, if you're in the middle of fasting on a religious holiday and you brush your teeth and any of the toothpaste goes down your throat, you have broken your fast, and that is totally offensive.
Yep, because we all know how good toothpaste is. And
wow.
Well, it all depends. You know, yeah, you get that cherry-flavored stuff.
Yeah.
You go to...
if it sits on a Ritz, you know.
You get hooked on mint.
Well, some of this stuff, you got to hear some of this stuff. E3.4, it's best to clean the teeth laterally, beginning on the right and paying particular attention to the bases of the back teeth. Okay. Then you are allowed to trim fingernails and toenails, but you can't pluck hair out. Plucking it out or shaving it off is offensive. Okay. Shaving one's beard is unlawful, according to all the imams. Let's see. Okay, for those who do it, in other words, plucking hair away, to pluck away the hair of the underarms and nostrils, though if plucking the underarms is a hardship, then shaving them, and to shave the pubic hair. That's all allowed. And then it talks about eyeliner. And it said each eye an odd number of times, preferably 3, if you're going to line your eyes with eyeliner. It's offensive to shave part of the head and leave part unshaven. Then we get into some fun stuff like circumcision. So hopefully there are ladies out there listening to this. In E4.3, circumcision is obligatory for both men and women.
Oops.
And then it goes into a description of the actual process. I don't know if you want me to go into that, but men and women are both.
It sounds painful and heinous.
Just reading this, okay. Let's see. It is unlawful for men or women to dye their hair black, except when the intention is jihad, to show a strength to the unbelievers. Plucking out gray hair is offensive. It's okay to dye the hair with yellow or red. However, it's unlawful for a woman to cut her hair to disfigure herself, such as in mourning for someone who's died. Let's see, Mary went down, hands and feet with henna. Let's see, sunburn. Okay, some of this stuff is good. Okay, let's get into the chapter here on entitled filth. That's fun. Okay, and let's see. Ready stones, here come the stones. All right, going to the lavatory.
Ooh.
Let's see. It is recommended when you are going to the lavatory to cover your head, even only with a handkerchief.
Just to go in there?
Let's see.
Wow.
To ready stones, to clean oneself. though water alone is sufficient. Before entering the laboratory, you should say, and I quote, in the name of Allah, I take refuge in you from demons, male and female, unquote. To enter the lavatory with the left foot first and depart the lavatory with the right foot first.
What the heck has that got to do with anything?
Kind of a hokey-pokey deal there.
Your guess is as good as mine, okay? It's not only for indoors, but it's recommended for outdoors as well.
Maybe they wrote the hokey-pokey. Yeah, that's a good point.
The hokey-pokey is secretly teaching us Sharia law.
Yeah.
Do not raise your garment until you have actually squatted down to the ground. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's see. Put most of one's weight on the left foot while squatting.
Huh. Well, that's not happening for me today.
No. You're a violator.
Let's see. When finished urinating, for men, they should squeeze with the left hand. Let's see. Women, and for women to squeeze between thumb and forefinger.
Oh.
Let's see. Pulling lightly three times. I think I really want to get into that.
How do people remember all this stuff?
I got to take a rule book around with them.
You can't. I mean, it's just some of this stuff.
I mean, this takes like micromanaging to a new low.
It is. It is actually micromanaging everything, okay?
Well, maybe they have all these rules so that if they really want to get down on somebody, they can
there's something you pull can up. Bust them
no,
for?
They can always bust them
oh,
for something.
Oh, they'll find something, sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, you're breaking a law somewhere along the way.
I saw you walk into the bathroom with your right foot first.
Number 15, do not urinate into holes on hard places where there is wind, in waterways where people gather to talk, on paths under fruit trees, near graves, in still water, or in less than 216 liters of running water. Do not relieve oneself with one's front or rear facing the sun, moon, or the sacred precinct in Jerusalem. Let's see. It is not lawful. It is unlawful to urinate or defecate with one's front or rear towards the direction of prayer when outdoors. It is obligatory. Oh, this is great. E 9.4. It is obligatory to clean oneself of every impure substance coming from one's front or rear, though not from gas, dry worms, or stones, or excrement without moisture.
And so when did all this show up? Like what? These rules were all
started about 1350. This was actually all written down and codified into one volume, kind of like the Quran. So it was all taken into account. This guy studied all of the various precedents and interpretations prior to that point, and then all of this stuff got written down and put into this one volume called The Reliance of the Traveler and The Guide for the Worshipper. And it has been updated up to the current time. That's why it talks about TV and movies and stuff like that.
And what was the original? He had multiple original sources, or was this at some point? Was this in the Quran, or where did the?
No, it was in the Hadith.
Most of
this stuff was in the Hadith.
Okay.
Okay. The Quran essentially defines the faith, whereas the Hadith defines the behavior, for example, of Muhammad and people who sat around with him as followers, and they said, "Hey Mo, we got a question for you. What do you think of this?
Study his every move."
And he gave the answer, and then when the Hadith was put together by Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, then what happened was, you know, everybody sent these little pieces of paper in there or whatever they wrote it on and said, yeah, I was with Muhammad on Saturday night about, 8 p.m., and I asked him this question, and here was his answer. So when you go and you read the Hadith in Bukhari or any of the other writers, it'll go from verse to verse, and then there will be a question. According to, for example, according to Ibn Huraira, Muhammad was asked something, and here is his response. According to that person who is giving this, you know, authentication.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's where all this stuff comes from. And then when you get to, let's see, we go to chapter 14. The word filth means urine, excrement, blood, pus, vomit, wine. Notice that. Wine in Arabic is haram, meaning it's filth.
Lying,
let's
huh?
see.
I thought they liked lying.
No.
Now, what's interesting, it says solid lying. Intoxicants.
I thought he said lying.
Solid intoxicants are not filth, but you can't eat or drink them. Go figure.
Say that again?
So you can't eat it.
Dogs and pigs.
So you could smoke some intoxicants. Okay.
Then it goes into, in 14.5, what are pure things.
All right, we've got to take a really quick break, Peter.
Yeah,
we'll come right back.
Yeah, let's get into some pure things because...
because everything else is pretty much
you're
bad.
You're going to love this. Yeah.
Okay, we'll hit that when we come back. And because I'm sure...
This is basically our topic, everything you wanted to know about Sharia law, but we're afraid to ask. And some of these things, I guess, fall under the heading of you would never have thought to ask. Actually, most of these things you would never have thought to ask.
They did ask, though, and they got the answer.
They've been studying this for 1,300 years.
That's right.
Dang, that's a long time.
All right. The answer for everything takes it to a whole new level.
We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I've got to go to the bathroom with my right foot. I'll be right back. My left foot. Left foot in.
All right, so Peter, for those people who might have just tuned in, missed the wine part, what's the deal with the wine again? It's filthy?
Okay, wine by itself is wine, is unlawful, okay?
So wine sitting in a glass on a table?
Correct. That's you can't drink alcohol.
Okay.
However, when you go to Section E, 14.5, and it talks about filth in item 4, which is transformed molecularly into a new substance.
Wow.
For example, wine that becomes vinegar without anything having been introduced into it is pure, as are the sides of the container it touched when it splashed or boiled. But if anything was introduced into the wine before it became vinegar, then turning to vinegar does not purify it. So you can go out and you get wine, you just let it sit till it turns to vinegar, and you make a salad. Excuse me. Some other things that are defined as pure in E14.5. Seminal fluid that has reached the stages of gestation in the womb, becoming like a blood clot and then becoming flesh. The moisture and mucus of a woman's private parts, as long as it remains inside the area, that need not be washed in the purificatory bath, though if it exits, it's impure. Number 3, the eggs of anything. What is also pure is human milk, male sperm, and female sexual fluid. You can't believe this. Anyway, let's move on. Remember last week with Sharia Finance, we were talking about the five pillars of Islam, and the fourth pillar was zakat, or the tax on Muslims. Remember, 2.5% of the annual income and stuff like that, and how we're funding jihad with the Islamic index on the Dow Jones. Well, that is codified here in Sharia. And when you go to section H and you go to 8.17, and it says the seventh category is those fighting for Allah, meaning people engaged in Islamic military operations. They are given enough to suffice them for the operation, for weapons, mounts, clothing, and expenses, for the duration of the journey, the round trip, the time they spend there. You know, think of the guys, the 19 hijackers with the World Trade Center and where that money came from. Let's see. When we go to, it is not permissible, H8.24, it is not permissible to give zakat to a non-Muslim. That is sadaqah. Let's see, obligatory acts. Let's go to jihad. Because that's
the
out there.
The ever popular jihad that they say
isn't.
Oh,
the ever popular jihad. Okay, so we go to section O, 9.0, where it starts and it talks about jihad. It says jihad means to wage war against non-Muslims and is etymologically derived from the word mujahada. Now, if you remember bin Laden, when he was fighting the Russians and we were arming him over there in Afghanistan, they were called the Mujahideen.
Yeah.
Mujahideen, yeah.
There you go. They were the Mujahideen, and they were engaged in jihad or Mujahada. Let's see. Signifying warfare to establish a religion. We have, let's see, returned the scriptural basis for jihad prior to scholarly consensus. Is such Quranic verses are as 2.216, fighting is prescribed to you. These are from the Quran. 4.89, slay them wherever you find them. That means us. 9.36, fight the idolaters utterly. That is us. By the way, they consider Catholics, of course, who believe in the Trinity as being idolaters because a Muslim can never set foot in a Catholic church because it's full of idols. You know, you've got the statue of Mary and pictures, and so those are idolaters. Let's see, in Hadith, related by Bukhari and Muslim. Let's see, quote, I have been commanded to fight people until they testify that there is no God but Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and they perform the prayer, pay zakat. Let's see, Hadith reported by Muslim. To go forth in the morning or evening to fight in the path of Allah is better than the whole world and everything in it. It just goes on and on and on. Here is the obligatory character of jihad in 9.1. Jihad is a communal obligation on the entire Islamic community. He who provides the equipment for a soldier in jihad has himself performed jihad. See, Allah has preferred those who fight with their property and lives a whole degree above those who sit behind, and to each Allah has promised a great good. There's your paradise. Let's see. Who's aware is guilty of sin. The first is the second state. Let's see. The second state. Let's talk about the first state. If none of those concerned perform jihad and it does not happen at all, then everyone who is aware that it is obligatory is guilty of sin. As for subsequent times, there are two possible states in respect to non-Muslims. The first is when non-Muslims are in their own countries, in which case jihad is a communal obligation. The second state is when non-Muslims invade a Muslim country, in which case jihad is personally obligatory upon the inhabitants of that country, who must repel the non-Muslims with whatever they can. Is a lot of this stuff in the news now making sense when you read this?
Sure. So if a Muslim is in a non-Muslim state, it's his obligation to
personally
fight.
Not as a community, but personally. Mm-hmm. That's where you get all these lone wolves.
Lone wolves. There you are.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I'm not the only one reading this stuff.
But, okay, so I guess it kind of begs the question, though, because they're always saying, well, these are the extremists. This isn't what is being taught to everyone. How can they even make that claim with all of this?
They can't. They can't. Okay? That is called taqiyya, or religious deception. That is the Arabic word, taqiyya, religious deception. And Muslims are allowed to lie in two instances to non-believers, the first being if they're captured in battle, they can lie about being Muslim in order to save their lives so that they can go fight another day. Number two, they can lie to a non-Muslim in any way, shape, or form that will advance the cause of Islamic domination. Huh. So all of this stuff that you hear about Muslim being a religion of peace and tolerance, it's all bull. Those are lies. Those are religious deceptions because I am reading from the Sharia.
So when we have these captives in Guantanamo and they tell their captors they've reformed and they're not going back to the battle, that's totally okay. Yeah. So how can you believe anything they say? Yeah, you can't believe anything.
Because they are specifically allowed to do that. And it's codified not only in the Quran, but it's codified here in Reliance of the Traveler under Sharia.
Well, when they talk about bringing, you know, they want Sharia courts and they want, you know, they basically want their a parallel, I guess, group of laws to what the rest of the country follows. I'm going to ask a stupid question. I was going to say, why would we ever do that? Mostly because we didn't read the book, which I can hear you in the back of my head going, read the book!
Exactly. Read the bloody book.
Read the damn book.
I think I told you early on that in the United States, there have been 52 cases that have been adjudicated using Sharia, using this book in 26 states in the United States. There are Sharia courts now that are all over England that have been approved by Parliament in Muslim communities, in France, North Paris, up in the arrondissement called La Défense, where the Muslims burned 9,000 cars, if you recall back in 2005 when they were rioting. They are attempting now to push Sharia law in those areas up there, which the French police have now designated as no-go zones. They want to do it up by the Sacré-Cœur up there because the Muslims have taken over that whole area in up there in Montmartre, up by the Sacré-Cœur, up on the hill. That's all Islamic now. The last time I was there, you got people with hibachis out on the sidewalk with goats and chickens walking around. It's a mess.
Well, there are parts of England now that are under Sharia law. Is that correct?
Yeah, up by the Finsbury Mosque in North London. That's where that Anjem Chowdhury, crazy imam up there, is from.
And do you see that changing now that they're, you know, making a break from the EU and kind of redoing a lot of this? I think they see the error of their ways with the whole multiculturalism thing. Do you see the whole Sharia thing changing course, or is that pretty well ingrained and staying where it is, do you think?
They're at a tipping point right now, and the one thing that gives us some compatibility with them is that at least England is an island and they're separated by the English Channel from the continent.
Right.
They have the ability to right the ship. Fortunately, we have the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, at least on two sides of our country, which gives us a little bit of breathing room. But, God, we're bringing them in by the millions.
Right, right.
Obama's brought over a million of them in the last 8 years. And Hillary Clinton wants to bring in 550% more which he's already admitted. And if you figure that there's 70,000 in the president's report every year for the last 8 years that we're bringing in, and she wants to bring in 550%, that's an additional 385,000 in the next year. It's suicide.
So what do they think? What do they think that's going to do? I mean, what's? I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's not a lot of
the stuff.
They
go on welfare and they vote Democrat.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing. They're loading up the Democratic rolls because that party is allowing them to come in and conduct themselves in any fashion they want.
Don't they realize they're getting waxed? I mean, they're the first guys on the block.
Well, imagine what would happen if they moved a whole lot of them into San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, you eliminate two-thirds of the population just based on their rules.
You know, it's just, and it's all in here, by the way. It's all in this book.
Let's talk about some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we need to take a break, Peter, but when we come back, we're at the top of the hour. When we come back, let's talk about Sharia in the United States and what communities now are leaning that way and what's happening there.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, and how great that's going to be for everybody else who doesn't get it. We will be right back. You are listening to We the People. We're on with Peter Friedman today. We're talking about everything you wanted to ask about Sharia law, but actually didn't have a good source to ask, or were afraid to ask. Both are good reasons. We'll be right back.